LibriVox.blogsome.com. Recording by Maureen S. O'Brien. Maria Electrics. Blogspot.com. Five Children and It by E. Nesbitt. Chapter 4. Wings. The next day was very wet. Too wet to go out, and far too wet to think of disturbing the sand fairy so sensitive to water being still after thousands of years, felt the pain of once having had his left whisker red. It was a long day, and it was not till the afternoon that all the children suddenly decided to write letters to their mother. It was Robert who had the misfortune to upset the ink pot, an unusually deep and full one, straight into that part of Anthea's desk where she had long contended that an arrangement of gum and cardboard was a secret drawer. It was not exactly Robert's fault. It was only his misfortune that he chanced to be lifting the ink across the desk just at the moment when Anthea had got it open, and that same moment should have been the one chosen by the lamb to get under the table and break the squeaking bird. There was a sharp, convenient wire inside the bird, and of course the lamb ran the wire into Robert's leg at once. And so, without anyone's meaning to, the secret drawer was flooded with ink. At the same time, a stream was poured over Anthea's half-finished letter. So that her letter was something like this. Darling Mother, I hope you are quite well, and I hope Granny is better. The other day we... Then came a flood of ink, and at the bottom these words in pencil. It was not me upset the ink, but it took such a time clearing up, so no more as it is post time. From your loving daughter, Anthea. Robert's letter had not even been done. He had been drawing the ship on the blotting paper whilst he was trying to think of what to say. And of course, after the ink was upset, he had to help Anthea to clean out the desk, and he promised to make her another secret drawer better than the other. And she said, well, make it now. So it was post time, and his letter wasn't done, and the secret drawer wasn't done either. Cyril wrote a long letter, very fast, and then went to set a trap for slugs that he had read about in Homemade Gardener, and when it was post time, the letter could not be found, and it never was found. Perhaps the slugs did it. Jane's letter was the only one that went. She meant to tell her mother all about the salmon man. In fact, they had all meant to do this, but she stuck little cold, but Martha says she's napping. Only she upset the goldfish in the sack yesterday morning. When we were up at the sandpit the other day, we went round by the Safeway where carts go, and we found a... Half an hour went by before Jane felt quite sure that they could none of them spell Sam yet. And they could not find it in the dictionary either, though they looked. Then Jane hastily finished her letter. We found a strange thing, but it is nearly post time, so no more at present from your little girl, Jane. P.S. If you could have a wish come true, what would you have? Then the postman heard blowing his horn, and Robert rushed out in the rain to stop his cart and give him the letter. And that was how it happened that though all the children meant to tell their mother about the sand fairy, somehow or other she never got to know. There were other reasons why she never got to know, but these come later. The next day, Uncle Richard came and took them all to Maidstone in a wagonette, all except Elaine. Uncle Richard was the very best kind of uncle. He brought the toys at Maidstone. He took them into a shop and let them choose exactly what they wanted without any restrictions about price and no nonsense about things being instructive. It is very wise to let children choose exactly what they like because they are very foolish and inexperienced. Sometimes they will choose a really instructive thing without meaning to. This happened to Robert. He chose at the last moment and in a great hurry a box with pictures on it of winged bulls with men's head and winged men with eagles' heads. He thought there would be animals inside, the same as on the box. When he got it home, it was a Sunday puzzle about ancient Nineveh. The others chose the names and were happy at leisure. Cyril had a model engine, and the girls had two dolls, as well as a china tea set with forget-me-nots on it to be between them. The boys between them was bow and arrows. Then Uncle Richard took them on the beautiful Medway in a boat, and then they all had tea at a beautiful pastry cook's, and when they reached home, it was far too late to have any wishes that day. Uncle Richard anything about the Sammy yet. I do not know why, and they do not know why, but I dare say you can guess. The day after Uncle Richard had behaved so handsomely was a very hot day indeed. The people who decide what the weather is to be and put its orders down for it in the newspapers every morning, said afterwards that it was the hottest day there had been for years. They had ordered it to be warmer, some showers, and warmer it certainly was. In fact, it was so busy being warmer which is very interesting and makes you feel as though you are in a new other world. And Thea awoke at 5. She has made herself awake, and I must tell you how it is done, even if it keeps you waiting for the story to go on. You get into bed at night and lie down quite flat on your little back with your hands straight down by your side. Then you say, I must wake up at 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever time is that you want. And as you say it, you push your chin down on your chest and then bang your head back on the pillow. And you do this as many times as there are ones in the time you want to wake up at. It is quite an easy sum. Of course, everything depends on you really wanting to get up at 5 or 6 or 7. But really want to, it's all no use. But if you do, well, try and see. Of course, in this, as in doing Latin poses or getting into mischief, practice makes perfect. And feels quite perfect. At the very moment when she opened her eyes, she heard the black and gold clock down in the dining room strike 11. So she knew it was 5:10. The black and gold clock always struck wrong, but it was all right when you knew what it meant. It was like a person talking a foreign language. If you know the language, it is just as easy to understand as English. And Thea knew the clock language. She was very sleepy, but she jumped out of bed and put her face and hands into a basin of cold water. This is a fairy charm that prevents your wanting to get back in bed again. Then she dressed and folded up her nightgown. She did not tumble it together by the sleeves, but folded it by the seams from the hem. And that will show you the kind of well-brought-up little girl she was. Then she took her shoes in her hand and crept softly down the stairs. She opened the dining room window and climbed out. It would have been just as easy to go out by the door, but the window was more romantic and less likely to be noticed by Martha. I will always get up at 5, she said to herself. It was quite too awful a pity for anything. Her heart was beating quite fast, for she was carrying out a plan quite her own. She could not be sure that it was a good plan, but she was quite sure that it would not be any better if she were to tell the others about it. And she had a feeling that, right or wrong, she would rather go through with it alone. She put on her shoes under the iron veranda on the red and yellow shining tiles, and then she ran straight to the sand pit and found the Samoyed's place and dug it out. It was very cross indeed. "It's too bad," it said, knew whether it was Megatherium or Ichthyosaurus that they really wanted for dinner. "I'll try that," said Anthea, "but I do wish..." "Look out!" said the Sammy Ad in a warning voice, and it began to blow itself up. "Oh, this isn't a magic wish. It's just... I'd be so glad if you'd not swirl yourself out near the ghost to give me anything just now. Wait till the others are here."
Well,
said the gentleman, but it shivered. "Would you," asked Anthea kindly, "would you like to come and sit on my lap? You'd be warmer, and I could turn the skirt of my frock up around you. I'd be very careful." Anthea had never expected that it would, but it did. "Thank you," it said. "You really are rather thoughtful." It crept under her lap and snuggled down. And she put her arms around it with a rather frightened gentleness. "Now then," it said. "Well then," said Anthea, "everything we have wished has turned out rather horrid. I wish you would advise us. You are so old, you must be very wise."
"Generous from a child," said the Sandman. "I've spent the whole of my waking hours in giving. But one thing I won't give, that's advice."
"You see," Anthea went on, "it's such a wonderful thing, such a splendid, glorious chance. It's so good and kind and dear of you to give us our wishes, and it seems such a pity it should all be wasted just because you are too silly to know what to wish for." Anthea had meant to say that, and she had not wanted to say it before the others. It's one thing to say you're silly, and quite another other people are.
"Child," said the Sand Fairy simply, "I can only advise you to think before you speak."
"But I thought you never gave advice."
"That doesn't count," it said. "You'll never take it. Besides, it's not original. It's in all the copy books."
"But won't you just say if you think wings would be a silly wish?"
"Wings," it said. "I should think you might be worse. Only take care your aren't flying high at sunset. There was a little Ninevite boy I heard of once. He was one of King Sennacherib's sons, and a traveler brought him a Samiad. He used to keep it in a box of sand on the palace terrace. It was a dreadful degradation for one of us, of course. Still, the boy was the Assyrian king's son. And one day, he wished for wings and got them. But he forgot that they would turn into stone at sunset. And when they did, he fell slap onto one of the winged lions at the top of his father's great staircase. And what with his stone wings and the lion's stone wings, well, it's not a pretty story.
even the boy enjoyed himself very much till then.
Tell me, said Alexia, why don't our wishes turn into stone now?
Why do they just vanish?
Ultra times, ultra mores, said the old teacher.
Is that the Ninevite language?
Who has learned no foreign language at school except French.
What I mean is,
the standing went on,
that in the old days, people wished for good, solid, everyday gifts. Now, some pterodactyls and things, and those could be turned into stone as easy as wanted by everybody into stone. You see, it can't be done. And it would never do to have two rules. So they simply vanish. If being beautiful Earth Day could be turned into stone, it would last an awfully long time, you know. Much longer than you would.
Just look at the Greek statues.
It's just as well as it is.
Goodbye.
I am so sleepy. It jumped off her lap, buzzed frantically, and vanished. And Theo was late for breakfast. It was Robert who quietly poured a spoonful of treacle so the tea had to be taken away and washed thoroughly directly after breakfast. And it was, of course, a very naughty thing to do. But it served two purposes. It delighted the lamb, who loved above all things to be completely sticky, and it engaged Martha's attention, so that the others could slip away to the sand pit without the lamb. They did it, and in the lane, Anthea, breathless from the scurry of that slipping, panted out,
I want to propose we take turns to wish. All night, you'll please to have a wish if the others don't think it's a nice wish. Do you agree?
Who's to have first wish? Asked Robert cautiously.
Me, if you don't mind, said Anthea apologetically. And I've thought about it, and it's kings.
There was a silence.
The others rather wanted to find fault, but it was hard, because the word wings raised a flutter of joyous excitement in every breast.
Not so dusty, said Cyril generously, and Roger added,
really, Tonto, you're not quite such a fool as you look.
Jane said,
I think it would be perfectly lovely. It's like a bright dream of delirium.
snail rides from one to the other.
Not so dusty, it said dreamily. But really, Robin, you're not quite such an angel as you look.
Robert almost blushed. The wings were very big. More beautiful than you could possibly imagine. For they were soft and smooth, and every feather lay neatly in its place. And the feathers were of the most lovely and mixed changing colors, like the rainbow, or iridescent glass, or the beautiful scum that sometimes floats on water that is not at all nice to drink.
Oh, but can we fly?
Jane said, standing anxiously first on one foot and then on the other.
Look out, said Cyril. You're treading on my wing.
Does it hurt? Asked Anthea with interest. But no one answered, for Robert had spread his wings and jumped up, and now he was slowly rising in the air. He looked very awkward in his knickerbocker suit. His boots in particular hung helplessly and seemed much larger than when he was standing in them. But the others cared but little how he looked, or how they looked for that matter. And now they all spread out their wings and rose in the air. Of course, you all know what flying feels like, because everyone has dreamed about flying, and it seems so beautifully easy. Only you can never remember how you did it, and as a rule, you have to do it without wings in your dreams, which is more clever and uncommon, but not so easy to remember the rule for. Now the four children rose flapping from the ground, and you can't think how good the air felt running against their faces. Their wings were tremendously wide when they were spread out, and they had to fly quite a long way apart so as not to get in each other's way. But little things like this are easily learned. All the words in the English dictionary and in the great Greek lexicon as well are, I find, of no use at all to tell you exactly what it feels like to be flying, so I will not try. But I will say that to look down on the fields and woods instead of along them is something like looking at a beautiful live map, where instead of silly colors on paper, you have real moving sunny woods and green fields laid out one after the other. As Cyril said, I can't think where he got hold of such a strange expression. It does you a fair treat. It was most and more like real magic than any wish the children had had yet. They flapped and flew and sailed on their great rainbow wings between green earth and blue sky. And they flew right over Rochester and then swerved round toward Maidstone, and presently they all began to feel extremely hungry. Curiously enough, the explain to you how this is done, but it is something like treading water when you are swimming. Hawks do it extremely well.
Yes, I dare say, said Stira, but no one was spoken.
But stealing is stealing, even if you've got wings.
Do you really think so? Said Jane briskly.
If you've got wings, you're a bird, and no one minds birds breaking the commandments. At least, they may mind, but the birds always do it, and no one scolds them or sends them to prison. It was not so easy to perch on a plum tree as you might think, because the rainbow rings were so very large. But somehow they all managed to do it, and the plums were certainly very sweet and juicy. Fortunately, it was not till they had all had quite as many plums as were good for them that they saw a stout man who looked exactly as though he owned the plum trees come hurrying to the orchard gate with a thick stick, and with one accord they disentangled their wings from the plum-laden branches. And stopped short with his mouth open, for he had seen the boughs of his trees moving and twitching, and he had said to himself, "Young varmint's out again!" And he had come out at once, but the lads of the village had caught him in the past season as the plums weren't looking after. And when he saw the rainbow wings flutter up of the plum tree, he felt that he must have gone quite mad, and he did not like the feeling at all. And when Anthea looked down and saw his mouth go slowly open and stay so, and his face become greener mauve in patches, she called out, "Don't be frightened," and felt hastily in her pocket for a threepenny bit with no hole in it, which she had meant to hang on a ribbon round her neck for luck. She hovered round the unfortunate plum woman and said, "We have had some of your plums. We thought it wasn't stealing, but now I'm not so sure. So, here's some money to pay for them." Whooped down towards the terror-stricken grower of plums and slipped the coin into the pocket of his jacket, and in a few steps she rejoined the others. The farmer sat down on the grass, suddenly and heavily. "Well, I'm blessed," he said. "This here is what they call delusions, I suppose. This here threepenny," he pulled it out and bit me, "that's real enough. Well, from this day forth I'll be a better man. It's the kind of thing to sober a chap for life, this is. I'm glad it was only wings, though. I'd rather see birds as aren't there and couldn't be, even if they pretend to talk, than some things that I could name." He got up slowly and heavily and went indoors, and he was so nice to his wife that day that she felt quite happy and said to herself, "La, what else?" fierce dog would have had a good bite out of the brown, stocking leg of Robert, who was the nearest. But at the first growl, there was a flutter of wings, and the dog was left to strain at his chain and stand on his hind legs as if he were trying to fly too. Other farms, but at those where there were no dogs, the people were far too frightened to do anything but scream. And at last, when it was nearly 4 o'clock, and their wings were getting miserably stiff and tired, they alighted on the church tower and held a council of war. Was finally I know, because of course you know about angels, but you must not think we were angels. We will only take the necessities of life, and no pudding or pie, to show you it is not greediness, but true starvation that makes us make your larder stand and deliver. But we are not highwaymen by trade.
Cut it short, said the other sweet-smelling porter,
and Ampio hastily added, our intentions are quite honorable if only you knew. And here is half a crown to show we are sincere and grateful. Thank you for your kind hospitality. From us four. The half crown was wrapped in this letter, and all the children thought that when the clergyman had read it, he would understand everything. As well as anyone could who had not seen the wings. Now, said Sierra, of course there's some risk. We'd better fly straight down the other side of the tower and then flutter low across the churchyard and in through the shrubbery. There doesn't seem to be anyone about. But you never know. The window looks out into the shrubbery. It is embowered in foliage, like a window in a story. I'll go in and get the things. Robert and Anthea can take them as I hand them out through the window, and Jane can keep watch. Her eyes are sharp, and whistle if she sees anyone about. Shut up, Robert. She can whistle quite well enough for that, anyway. It ought not to be a very good whistle. It will sound more natural and bird-like. Now then, off we go. I cannot pretend that stealing is right. I can only say that on this occasion, it did not look like stealing to the hungry poor, but appeared in the light of a fair and reasonable business transaction. They had never happened to learn that a tongue, hardly cut into, a chicken and a half, a loaf of bread, and a siphon of soda water cannot be bought in shops for half a crown. These were the necessaries of life, which Cyril handed out of the larger window when, quite unobserved and without hindrance or adventure, he had led the others to that happy spot. He felt that to refrain from jam, apple turnovers, cake, and mixed candy peel was a really heroic act, and I agree with him. He was also proud of not taking the custard pudding, and there I think he was wrong, because if he had taken it, there would have been a difficulty about returning the dish. No one, however starving, has a right to steal china pie dishes with little pink flowers on them. The soda water siphon was different. They could not do without something to drink, and as the maker's name was on it, they felt sure that it would be returned to him wherever they might leave it. If they had time, they would take it back themselves. The man appeared to live in Rochester, which would not be much out of their way home. Everything was carried up to the top of the tower and laid down on a sheet of kitchen paper which Ciro had found on the top shelf of the larder. As he unfolded it, Anthea said, there must be lots of rainwater here. And when it dries up, the Germans will arrive. And they get into the things, and we could all die of scarlet fever. What are Germans?
A little wider things you see with microscopes,
says Zero with a scientific dream. They give you every illness you can think of. I'm sure the paper will be necessary, just as much as the bread and meat and water. Now then. Oh my eyes, I am hungry. I do not wish to describe the picnic party on the top of the tower. You can imagine well enough what it is like to carve a chicken and a tongue with a knife that has only one blade. And that's not cut short about halfway down. But it was done. Eating with your fingers is greasy and difficult, and paper dishes soon get to look very spotty and horrid. One thing you can't imagine, and that is how soda water behaves when you try to drink it straight out of a siphon, especially a quite full one. But if imagination will not help you, experience will, and you can easily try it for yourself if you can get a grown-up to give you the siphon. If you want to have a really thorough experience, put the tube in your mouth and press the handle very suddenly and very hard. You'd better do it when you are alone. And out of doors is best for this experiment. However you eat them, and new bread are very good things, and no one minds being sprinkled with a little soda water on a really fine hot day, so that everyone enjoyed the dinner very much indeed, and everyone ate as much as it possibly could. First, because it was extremely hungry, and secondly, as I said, tongue and chicken and new bread are very nice. Now, I dare say you will have noticed that if you have to wait for your dinner till long after the proper time, and then eat a great deal more dinner than usual, and sit in the hot sun on top of a church tower, or even anywhere else, you become soon and strangely sleepy. Now, Anthea and Jane and Cyril and Robert were very like you in many ways, and when they had eaten all they could and drunk all there was, they became sleepy, strangely, soon, especially Anthea, because she had got up so early. One by one, they left off talking and leaned back, and before it was quarter of an hour after dinner, they had all curled around and tucked themselves up under their large the wings, cozy in eider-down quilts to sleep under. The shadow of the church tower fell across the churchyard, and across the vicarage, and across the field beyond, and presently there were no more shadows, and the sun had set, and the wings were gone. Still the children slept. But not for long. Twilight is very beautiful, but it is chilly. And you know, however sleepy you are, you wake up soon enough if your brother or sister happens to be up first and pulls your blankets off you. The four wingless children shivered and woke. There they were, on the top of the church tower, in the dusky twilight, with blue stars coming out by ones and twos and tens and twenties over their heads. Miles away from home, with three and three halfpence in their pocket, and a doubtful act about the necessities of life to be accounted for if anyone found them with the soda water siphon. They looked at one instead. Kira spoke first, picking up the siphon. "We'd better get along down and get rid of this beastly thing. It's dark enough to leave it on the clergyman's doorstep, I should think. Come on." They had not noticed this when they were eating, and had not explored it as you would have done in their place. There was a little turret at the corner of the tower, and the little turret had a door in it. They had noticed this when they were eating, but had not explored it as you would have done in their place. Because, of course, when you have wings and can explore into the sky, doors seem hardly worth exploring. Now they turned toward it. "Of course," said Sarah, "this is the way down." It was. The door was locked on the inside. And the world was growing darker and darker. And they were miles from home. There was the soda water siphon. I shall not tell you whether anyone cried, nor, if so, how many cried, nor who cried. You will be better employed in making up your mind what you would have done if you had been in my place. End of chapter 4. This recording was made for LibriVox by Maureen.